Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light of the world light. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me in the Extra Hour to talk about the Malachi prophecies and what's going on. Are we in the end days, end minutes, end hours? Is the producer of VFN Radio program, Pat Hamilton.
Hello, hello.
And the one who knows how to ride a bike in Central Park. And we do want the footage. We do want the footage. John Ramos. We're going to be talking about the Malachi prophecies. What does this particular present Pope of the Catholic Church represent in regards to the Malachi prophecies? What's taking place in regards to, as we talked about earlier, about North Korea, China, and Russia? Why are things clicking over so quickly, and why are we about to lose maybe our paper money? You've got to find out what's going on. Listen, God does nothing unless he warns us first and tells us ahead of time. God protects you if you listen to him. He says, hear what my spirit is saying to the churches. If a man of God or a man who says they're a man of God told you God doesn't speak, you're in trouble, because how are you going to know what to do? He says, hear what my spirit says to the churches. So I want to encourage you. We're going to be talking to you a light conversation, L-I-G-H-T, about what is the Lord saying in our days. This is a land of laws in America, and we need lawyers who are standing up for constitutional and Christian rights that are in the Constitution. We're going to be talking, hopefully, about Jay Sekulow and who's doing that with the ACLJ and his son and so much more. You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. Yes, you're listening to VFN Radio, and I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And John Ramos in the Extra Hour. Well, that was amazing. Went to find out how well you were able to ride your bike in the first section.
Oh,
you missed that.
Oh, my goodness.
If you missed, yeah.
that was horrible. I mean, I thank God I'm still alive. And here's the thing,
yes.
You know, some of these guys, they ride bikes, and, you know, I'm trying to enjoy this nice time with my wife, and these guys in these nice, probably poor Pat probably, guys in these biker uniforms, they have the, you know, the cycling pants, and they're just whizzing by me, just blurring
cyclone
by
pants.
Me, just, you know, and I'm like, show offs, you know, I'm just doing my best, you know, trying to pedal through the park.
Yeah, we heard about your best.
And,
did you have a helmet on, John?
I didn't have a helmet, but that's what my wife suggested. She said, you know,
I think you need one.
Hold on. Give me a second. Mayor Bloomberg's office, please.
Right,
I need.
Get me now.
Mayor, we need people to wear helmets, and we have a video that we can use for promotional for that. You know, I know you're busy. I'm speaking to the mayor. Mayor Bloomberg, we have somebody that did some footage this Saturday in the park. And we know you're into protecting everybody and keeping them safe with no sugar and stuff like that. Well, he is not wearing his helmet. And so this is great footage, Mayor Bloomberg. We can use this to tell people you need to wear a helmet in the park. I mean, he falls three times. He crashes three times.
And knocks his wife over.
He literally knocks his wife on her anniversary. Knocks her over on his... And this is perfect footage. So, Mayor Bloomberg... Oh, okay, hold on a minute. They got me on hold for a second. Mayor Bloomberg. Hello. Hello. Oh. Okay. Well, tell him to call me back. Have a good day. Okay. Sorry. What now? What was going on?
Listen, if you're not careful, he may make people who drive cars wear helmets, okay? So don't, you know.
Right. Right.
But I'm just glad that I survived it, and the rest of the day was a beautiful, beautiful day, and I enjoyed that time with my wife there as we celebrated our anniversary there. But I'm alive.
I'm trying to think. Well, I'm trying to, you know, always like trying to find meaning of things. What was God saying as Balaam was riding
bike.
His donkey through the prophet was riding his donkey through Sodom. No, I'm gonna say. No. Did it go forward? Did the bike go forward? Or was it always the same spot? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
No. The first time, like I told you, the first time I fell, the back tire. The back tire went over the back of my head, and I like a horse bucking.
That's terrible.
I flew. I mean, I was doing the whole Superman thing. I mean,
with a camera in your hand,
huh? With the phone in my hand, and I have to say,
were you recording?
Tuck and roll, tuck and roll, tuck and roll.
One scratch on my iPhone. Now my body is different. My body is different, but not one scratch on my iPhone. I've made it out alive, and so did the phone.
Wow,
amazing!
That's amazing, man. I'm just like.
And they have lanes for a reason. See, now, too, you know, I realize that they have horse lane, they have the biker's lane, and then they have the runner's lane.
Well, if you have not heard, you got to go to the first hour and hear his anniversary ride through the park in Central Park, and hopefully Mayor Bloomberg's office will call back.
Yes.
And we'll get a chance to, because I think that's the perfect footage for him.
Oh,
so go ahead and just post on Mayor Bloomberg's Facebook. I think it's called www.facebook.com/dictator. That you. What am I doing? That's not it. I heard that probably from Glenn Beck. He's always against everybody. That was probably where I heard that from.
Oh, he's not against everybody.
Well, you know, this is a nation of laws. America's a nation of laws. You know, if you don't know that, get in your car and ride faster than the law. To sit on a sign that says "Drive this fast," they'll pull you over. Understand that the Constitution tells us how the laws are to be made, and we have a three branches of government that are equal. Believe it or not, they're equal. It's just the biggest one don't know that they're actually equal to the single one. You know that the Congress, which is the Senate and House of Representatives. That they're equal to the executive branch, but they don't understand it, even though they're bigger than the, you know, like, come on. But so you have three branches of government, and the Congress are the ones who make laws. Mm. History, you're looking at a history lesson right here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the executive branch is the one that enforces law, and the judicial branch is the one that interprets the law in the context, is it constitutional? That's it. Is it constitutional or is it not constitutional? Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to have equal powers. One cannot tell the other one what to do. And it's so important because if we don't know this, we're going to just allow others to create laws that are unconstitutional that take away our constitutional rights. So we need, you know, if you're going to build a house, you get a builder, right? A contractor. If you're going to paint a portrait, you're going to get an artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to take a family portrait, you're going to get a photographer. If you're going to have a musician that can sing, you're actually going to have a musician that can sing, you know?
Mm, right.
And if you're going to be there's a reason why Congress in Washington, D.C. has a lot of lawyers. People joke about it. But that's the place where the laws are made and interpreted. That's why. I mean, it's not like, you know, non-lawyers are not going to go there. They're just into the law. But we need to have somebody who's standing up for us. The standing up for God and country, that stands up exactly like the Constitution is written, which means that as a Christian, you have rights, but a non-Christian has the very same rights. You know what I'm saying? That's America. That's the America that we presently have and have had in the context of that. And you can't, as a Christian, say, well, they can't do that, but I can. You know, and that's just going to open up a spirit of the opposite, you know, taking place of that. But with that, we have Jay Sekulow with his organization. I want you to hear about Jay Sekulow and what he's doing. And you hear about the moments of workplace rights and everything. I want to encourage you. We need right now more than ever before. We need people like Jay Sekulow and the ACLJ standing up for our rights. Listen up.
Jay Sekulow, an attorney with a passion for protecting religious liberty. To understand Jay's commitment to defending religious freedom, you've got to start with his family.
I never argued a case at the Supreme Court of the United States, and here I was, the grandson of a Russian immigrant. I'm only the second generation of my family born in the United States. And my grandfather came into the United States at age 14 through Ellis Island. Was a Russian immigrant, fled Russia with his family because of religious persecution against Jews.
For nearly a quarter of a century, Jay has been on the front lines, even before the formation of the American Center for Law and Justice in 1990. Jay at the Supreme Court, arguing Board of Airport Commissioners versus Jews for Jesus, challenging a public airport's ban on First Amendment activities.
Well, that was the first case, Jews for Jesus, and I had never been inside the Supreme Court of the United States until 3 weeks before I argued that case. The Supreme Court had just granted review. It was about literature distribution at airports, evangelism at airports. When I went to the Supreme Court of the United States, my entire pitch in that case was, this case is about freedom of speech. All nine justices agreed that, in fact, that was unconstitutional. One of these magazines, one of these legal magazines, said my argument was rude, aggressive, and obnoxious. But then when we won unanimously, and they were recasting the argument, they said I remained undeterred during intense questioning.
Jay's passion for the law and his desire to safeguard religious liberty really flourished at the Supreme Court. After the Jews for Jesus unanimous victory in 1987, the American Center for Law and Justice was formed in 1990, followed by a series of precedent-setting decisions. In 1990, a compelling victory, opening the door for student Bible clubs across America.
Bridget Mergens stood before the school board and asked that she be allowed to have a prayer club and a Bible club meet on her public high school campus. And they were denied that right.
On June 4th, 1990, 8 of the 9 Supreme Court justices ruled in favor of Mergens.
That's what the world said, that you'd have prayer and Bible studies back at a public school. No way. And then the decision came out. And it wasn't just a little victory, it was 8 justices out of 9. What does that say? God answers the prayer of his people.
For Jay, the next chapter, protecting the sanctity of human life. That too at the Supreme Court.
The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments this week in a case backed by President Bush that could roll back the right of a woman to choose whether or not to have an abortion.
As the case came to the Supreme Court of the United States, we realized that this could be a capstone.
I think the Justice Department took the proper approach, and they agreed with us on all points, and that is that this statute should not be applied to this activity, that opposition to abortion does not constitute discrimination against women. Thank you. No one knows whether you win or lose these cases until it comes out. I felt the arguments went well. We made all of our points. They appeared to be receptive to our side, and I felt that they gave the other side a hard time, and they gave us a hard time. It wasn't an easy argument.
There was a question whether federal courts had jurisdiction over these abortion protests. Well, fortunately, the federal government, the Department of Justice, agreed with our position that they did not. The pro-life movement needed some aggressive advocacy, and one thing I've been accused of, rightly so, is that I'm aggressive in the courtroom, and that aggression, the aggressive nature of the advocacy process, really needed to come to the forefront when you're dealing with abortion, and I did exactly what I do in cases, and we had a great result by God's grace.
In McConnell v. FEC in 2003, Jay cleared the way for young people, for minors, to engage the political process.
This was the big bipartisan campaign finance case. We represented, interestingly, students who wanted to contribute to political campaigns, including a Sunday school teacher who was running for Congress. I had a very short argument time. I think the entire argument may have been 5 or 10 minutes. I had 23 questions in 10 minutes of oral argument. It was nonstop.
Mr. Sekulow, is it necessary to rely on the First Amendment to reach your conclusion, or could you argue this an unreasonable restraint on liberty?
Well, I would argue both.
All 9 justices, again, agreed with my free speech argument. It showed that a strategy on free speech could work, no matter whether it was religious speech, political speech. It worked, and it kind of vindicated the position we'd been advocating at that point for almost 19 years.
During this time span, Jay became a frequent advocate at the Supreme Court, appearing numerous times, defending life, defending religious liberty, and protecting our national history and heritage.
Well, Ten Commandment litigation had been going on for decades and not very well. And we had this case coming out of Utah where this little town, Pleasant Grove, wanted to fight back. And this group came in to say, well, if you're going to display a Ten Commandments monument, we want you to display our monument, which was called the 7 Aphorisms, which were basically the anti-Ten Commandments monument. I went with a very aggressive strategy. It was controversial at the time, where I said, now look, this is the government making a decision to speak here. When the government's speaking, it can determine its message. 9 justices agreed with this, so it was a great decision and a great result.
In a world where Christians face discrimination, violence, even death for practicing their faith, it soon became clear that there was work to be done abroad. Jay knew that religious liberty, freedom, is an international right, a global concern. Offices were opened around the world: France, Russia, Africa, Pakistan, Israel. With so much of our future tied to what happens in the Middle East, Jay understood the importance of establishing an office in Jerusalem.
I appreciate the support of the American people.
Thank you.
All Israelis do.
All right.
So God bless America and God bless Israel.
Thank you.
Jay was named one of the most influential lawyers in the country. He's listed as one of a distinguished group of attorneys, quote, whose vision and commitment are changing lives. Under his direction, the ACLJ has been labeled, quote, a powerful counterweight to the ACLU. A comprehensive media strategy expands the reach of the ACLJ. Jay's daily radio broadcast tackles the tough issues that matter most. His weekly television show highlights key decision makers. A user-friendly website provides regular updates. And, of course, there are opportunities to debate the issues in the public arena. Jay Sekulow, chief counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. Even with the accomplishments and victories, he's never very far from his roots.
And my grandfather was a fruit peddler in Brooklyn, New York. My father was a retailer. What would he be thinking that his grandson is arguing cases before the Supreme Court of the United States, the most important court in the world?
That's amazing. So you need to focus on that. If we're a nation of laws, a nation of laws means we need to be able to know what the laws are. We need to check the laws out if they're constitutional. That's the purpose of the judiciary branch. We need to talk to our Congress, which is our Senate and our House of Representatives, to present laws that are constitutional. And we also need to support people who stand up, which is lawyers, who stand up for constitutional rights. Jay Sekulow, with his organization, has been faithful to be able to be there through the American Center of Law and Justice, which you can get to at aclj.org. Think about it. You know, you may be partnering with a lot of different ministries, but in America, a lot of people are thinking the answer is political. Well, the politics has been done because our founding fathers wrote the Constitution under the obviously, you know, amazing wisdom. And what we need now is just lawyers who hold everything to the constitutional, what's written. It's like, just like Dr. King said, I'm just holding to you to what's written on the paper.
That's it.
And we don't want to try to change it. We just want to hold the country to what's written on the paper, constitutional rights for everyone. And that means that when somebody says this person doesn't have don't have any rights, it's like, wait a minute, we all live under the same constitution. You can almost believe that, right? Like, wait a minute, oh no, if you're an American, then we all have constitutional rights.
That's right.
And so, in regards to who stood up, and it's interesting, isn't it? The first case that he won was for Israel. You know, it was for the Jews. Wow. You know, and Messianic Jews. And but that's amazing. Since then, his ministry, or his business ministry, has just blossomed.
Yeah, been blessed.
Yeah, and you bless Israel, you know, God will bless you. And I remember when that particular law was passed about, you know, being able to have Bible studies and schools and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. My dad was very instrumental during that time to start a program on the Emerald Coast area. Immediately, he was very excited about it and started putting together where businessmen and women would buy biscuits from a McDonald's or something, and they would carry them to the schools. And the early morning, they would have all these different children would show up early to get the biscuits and hear the gospel, and they would actually, you know, have Bible studies.
That's right.
Yeah, and
that's
it turned, right. And then it went from that to a whole new organization was birthed out of that that is still going today. But understand that if it wasn't for, you know, the prayers of the saints, it wasn't for Jay Sekulow arguing that case before the Supreme Court, then he wouldn't have been able to do that. And these things that are still going today, these Bible studies in schools. You remember that when
I used to go pick up a bunch of them and take them over to the school, and that's amazing. Wow, yes. So much has happened.
All time, I know.
Kind of connected all together. It's just amazing.
And it makes sense if we're a land of laws, which means we got to pay attention. Well, listen, Jay Sekulow, listen, you don't have to know how to add the numbers. If you got a good accountant, you just say, here, you know, take care of it. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to sing the song if you can't sing. You can hire a musician to sing it, an artist to sing it, or an artist to paint, or a photographer. You can actually get a lawyer who loves God and loves our country, who wants to just hold people, like Dr. King said, to what's on the paper. Mm-hmm. And Jay Sekulow, I'm telling you, you know, reach out to the different ministries that are out there and support them. We thank those who stand with VFN Radio and VFN TV. We couldn't do this without you. But also think about standing right now with Jay Sekulow, with American Center for Law and Justice. That's aclj.org, because we need somebody arguing these cases. You're listening to VFN Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Malachi prophecy, the interview with Sid Roth, in just a moment. You're listening to VFN Radio.
Do Bible clubs in public schools have the same rights as other clubs? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
My daughter, who is in eighth grade, she wants to have a Bible study after school, which has been done there before. She has been told that she can't make any announcements, that she can't hand out any flyers.
Are the other clubs allowed to utilize these other medium for the communication about their clubs?
My understanding is yes, and I know in the same district with the high school, they hand out all kinds of things.
Let me get you in touch with our lawyers here at the American Center for Law and Justice. Equal access means that it's the same access to the school medium, that is the public address system, the newspaper, the community bulletin boards, the club fair, those kind of things. They should be given the same rights as any other after-school group. So let me get you in touch with our lawyers here at the ACLJ, and we will get you some help on this right away.
Learn more about student rights and the American Center for Law and Justice at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
You know, it's exciting, you know, Greg. When I first gave my life to the Lord, I was so pumped about wanting to know more about Him and giving my life to Him. So I remember I just graduated a four-year university.
4 years.
4 years. Spent all this money in student loans. Oh, yeah. And I got my first real professional job, you know.
Wow.
And,
what was your degree in? What was your degree in?
Criminal justice.
Criminal justice. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is that funny?
Well, you know, coming from 10 years of law enforcement just makes me think about it.
Well, you know, so I just get my real professional job. I'm working for the Department of Juvenile Justice, and I hadn't even been there 6 months, but God is just doing such an amazing work mm-hmm. in my life, and mm-hmm. I'm willing to just leave my job, and I wind up going to a Bible college,
oh,
you know,
cool.
Go back to school.
Yeah.
And so
after four years of getting a degree, you're going to go back to school.
Right.
Wow.
And so I wanted to prepare myself, you know, and I thought, I didn't even think that God could use me. You know, I thought, you know, I'm going to be a Christian for a long time. I just want to, you know, know more about God, you know.
Totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I didn't even think, you know, I was going to be used to do anything for Him. And so I said, you know, this is a good idea. This is a good idea. So I go to school and I get all this education, and I'm hearing every week it appeared, you know, we're going to go to China and we're going to go to India. We're going to take Africa. And I'm thinking, who's going to take me?
Because as a believer, you have so many personal struggles, and you want to be able to find out how to get past that. You know, how do I help me from me, right?
You tell me about it, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, what was encouraging is to now to finish that and to be graduated. You know, it's so amazing what VFN University is all about mm-hmm. and how we can equip people that are hungry, believers that want to do something for God and not get lost in theological references but you can grow as a person. You
4-inch books.
Say it again.
4-inch books, you know what I'm saying?
Goodness, trying to study Hebrew and you can't make it out of Genesis. You know what I mean? It's like, what?
Yeah.
Are you really talking about Ezekiel right now? You know what I mean? They're like, you know, I love when Mark Twain says,
Can you help me turn my head right now?
Exactly.
Turn the pages.
I thought Mark Twain said, I hope I'm saying it correctly, but he says, not the scriptures that I don't understand that give me the biggest problems, it's the scriptures I do understand, you know? And
yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
let's start individually here. Let's work on our own growth and walk with the Lord. And so VFNU is a fresh perspective where a student is not, it's not about what you can do for God. It's about what God can do through you.
Right.
Oh, and through a personal abiding relationship. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you're out there and you're saying, you know, I've got all this education and I know all this stuff, but it's just not connecting. I need more myself. I'll tell you, you know, VFNU is for you. You can reach us at VFNUniversity.org mm-hmm. and reach out and explore the opportunities because mm-hmm. you're more important to the Lord than what you can do for Him. But He does want to use you.
Dude, that's what's so important, and the fact is that we first have to minister from the overflow of our personal relationship with Him. So we start learning all this knowledge without knowing how much He loves us and that we're in His family and we're working from a place of success, not for success.
Absolutely.
It's just so much safer, you know.
Sure. And out of relationship is a whole lot better than out of your head knowledge, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know it. Totally know it. Well, more at VFNU.org. That's VFNU.org.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I am your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me, of course, is Pat and John. That's my kind of transition. I like that. That's happening. That's happening. It sounds like North Texas University, right?
Yeah.
Hey, right. Man, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was talking about in the beginning, at the end of the first hour, and in the beginning, I think, of the extra hour, about the Malachi prophecies, a Sid Roth interview with a very, very important author who had written a book originally. It's called Petrus Ramonus, you know, but in that he actually specifically said that Pope Benedict would resign of March, April of 2012, mm-hmm. or possibly the next year. And of course, he does. The 2013 is when it happens, which is huge. It hadn't happened in 400 years, by the way.
Tom Horn.
Yeah, Tom Horn, and. In the context of that, he also, they found out that 1 year prior to the 2013, when he actually did resign. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to play some different sessions. You're going to hear this interview over a period of time that you're just going to be encouraged because our Lord is soon to return, but we also are going to be awakened, and we want to wake up. We don't want to be the ones on the outside of the ark scratching on it, trying to get in because we waited till the storm came. We want to be walking with God and hearing what He says today. So I'm going to go ahead, and we're going to hear this interview, Sid Roth.
Shalom, Mishpacha. Shalom, family. Mishpacha is a Hebrew word, means family, and we're the Mishpacha, the family with the Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people, where the middle wall of separation between Jew and Gentile, it's finally come down to form one new man. Getting ready, Mishpacha, to blow the grandest shofar, the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. I don't know if you've read that bestseller, Petrus Romanos, The Final Pope is Here, but I have one of the authors of the book, Chris Putnam, on the telephone. If you haven't heard about the Malachi prophecy, just briefly, Chris, I want you to explain it, but for those that aren't familiar with you, you are a theologian, and in particular, in grad school, you studied the history of Catholic and Protestant reformers, and this has all been amazing foundation for you, because yes, you're taking prophecies, but you're also have it the such a strong foundation in the Word it gives the perspective that everyone needs. Tell us a bit about the Malachi prophecy.
Well, I said it's great to be on the show with you. What we have in this Saint Malachi prophecy of the popes is an allegedly a 900-year-old prophecy by an Irish saint. The way that the account goes, St. Malachi had made a pilgrimage to Rome to have an audience with the Pope. Now, on Jenicum Hill, one of the hills outside of Rome, he had a vision from his day, 112 popes into the future, with the final pope reigning during the tribulation. So the way this vision came across, the way he recorded it, is a series of Latin phrases or mottos, which seem to predict something about each pope, perhaps a description of his coat of arms, or something about his name, or perhaps events that happened during his papacy. So we have this sequence of 112 mottos. Now, the thing that makes this all very intriguing is that Pope Benedict was 111 out of 112, meaning that this very next pope, the prediction for him seems to really strongly infer the end times. It says, in the extreme persecution of the Holy Roman Church, there will sit Peter the Roman, who will nourish the sheep in many tribulations. When they're finished, the city of Seven Hills will be destroyed, and the dreadful judge will judge his people. The end. So that is what this 900-year-old prophecy predicts to happen during the reign of the next Pope.
Now, how did you know, because he didn't say this, or did he, St. Malachi, how did you know that the Pope would resign so there'd be room for this last Pope?
Well, Sid, you know, one of the things I learned, you know, in seminary is that, you know, when you're digging into a subject like this, you know, you go out and you read everything that you can find about it. And, you know, I'm a Protestant. And I'm not necessarily predisposed to believing extra-biblical Catholic prophecies, but, you know, I wanted to give this thing a fair shake. And one of the books that I read about it and had to translate from French was by a Belgian Jesuit named René Thibault. Now, actually, he published this book in 1951, and he did all sorts of mystical calculations from the Latin text of this prophecy, and he came up with April 2012 as the date of the arrival of the final pope. Now, he didn't just do that in a trivial way. He actually did it from five or six different calculations. One of the simplest ones was that he calculated the average reign where a pope would be in office for 11 years. That's what he determined was the average. And then he just kind of extrapolated that forward from when he was writing in 1950, and he came up with the year 2012. Now, of course, that was very sensational with all the apocalyptic speculation about the year 2012. And, you know, we put it in our book, and there was also some rumors circulating around about Benedict's health. So we kind of went out on a limb based on his writing and these rumors, and you know, we put on pages 57 and 58 of our book that we thought he would step down for health reasons. Well, you know, 2012 came and went, and we were a little disappointed and, you know, figured, well, I guess that just wasn't going to happen the way Father Thibault said. But as it turns out, when I was reading the New York Times on February 11th this year about Benedict's stepping down, it actually says that the decision was made in the end of March after his trip to South America and, quote, kept with a reserve that no one could violate, end quote. So quite literally, he made the decision to step down right when this was predicted, and they've kept it a secret all year.
Okay. From looking at your book, you're very honest, and you've done good journalism in that a few of the prophecies of the popes might have been tampered with, but just a few. However, the majority, and in of recent years, of course, it was from the original prophecy. How accurate was it, in your opinion, as a biblical scholar?
Well, you know, one of the things that I looked at, you know, is that this thing was published in widely, you know, spread across the continent of Europe by 1595 in a book called Ligam Vitae. So no matter what people might say about it being a forgery or written after the fact, you really can't argue about the prophecies after 1595 because no one disputes that it was in print at that time. Now, you know, when you're testing something like this, the way you test a hypothesis in science is you try to falsify it. You look for a risky prediction. And one of the ones that really jumped out at me was Religio Depopulata. Now, in the sequence of the Malachi prophecy, that was the prophecy that matched Pope Benedict XV. Now, he was Pope from 1914 to 1922. And that prophecy actually in English would be Religion Depopulated. Now, that's a very risky prediction. All things being equal, you would expect the church to kind of remain the same. But what happened from 1914 to 1922? This was a time of World War I. Okay, this was devastating to Europe, devastating to the Catholic Church. To add insult to injury, this was the time of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, where they think that up to 200 million people left the church to join the Communist Party. And the ones that didn't, Lenin specifically targeted religious leaders. So right when this prophecy that we can prove was published hundreds of years before said that religion was depopulated, we see probably the greatest depopulation of religion in history.
What, tell me your sanctified speculation of what the last pope's reign will be like.
Well, based on the text of this prophecy, we see it's talking about the city of Seven Hills being destroyed. It's talking about judgment. Now, the city of Seven Hills is a really transparent reference to the city of Rome. And you know, this is what captured my imagination, because like I said, I'm not necessarily predisposed to these sort of Catholic prophecies, but when I look at the book of Revelation, and it talks about the great harlot and mystery of Babylon, I mean, it really strongly connects that to the city of Rome. In Revelation 17:9, it's talking about the seven-headed beast, and it has two aspects to the heads. In the first aspect, it says the heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Now, at the end of Revelation 17, it says that that woman that you saw is that great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth. Now, interpreting, you know, the Bible, you know, a good general rule is you always start with the author's intention. Now, when John was writing the book of Revelation around A.D. 90, it was at the peak of the Roman Empire. So a city that has dominion over the kings of the earth, in the Apostle John's mind, I think would be inarguably Rome.
Absolutely. But what is your sanctified speculation that will happen when this pope rules?
Well, you know, because I see this connection to biblical prophecy, you know, I think that it's a very good possibility, and this is what we argue, is that this final pope is the biblical false prophet. In Revelation chapter 13, you know, the Antichrist usually gets most of the press, but around verse 11 or so, it describes the second beast, and it says he has horns like a lamb, yet speaks like a dragon. Now, I think everyone will agree that like a lamb is a inference to Jesus, as the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Now, generally, you know, horns in apocalyptic literature are a sign of power. So I think that this description of the false prophet is saying that he's going to be seen as a powerful Christian leader, yet he's going to be speaking like a dragon and leading the world to worship the Antichrist. So for those reasons, you know, I think worldwide, you know, people, when they think of a powerful Christian leader, invariably would probably answer the pope. So that's I see him in that role.
Okay. Your brand-new book, literally off the press, not available in bookstores yet, is called Exo Vaticana. What does that mean?
Well, this prefix exo, you know, generally implies something otherworldly. And we have, you know, exoplanets, where they're looking at planets outside of our solar system. There's actually a area of theology now called exotheology that handles how would theologians handle an extraterrestrial reality. And the Catholics have really laid a lot of groundwork in that realm of thought, and this is what our book is about. We think that a very likely component of the end-time scenario will involve a claimed extraterrestrial presence.
Okay. You will not understand end times without these two books that document secret files in the Vatican Library and belief in aliens. Petrus Romanus, the last pope, hidden in the Vatican libraries over 900 years ago, a vision of the next 112 popes, stunning accuracy of the first 111. Now, this last pope will take office for the final judgment. The second book, Exo Vaticana, documents the Vatican's plan for arrival of an alien god with a small g, secret files in the Vatican Library on the reality of alien presence, Vatican's position on extraterrestrials, Vatican's Project Lucifer, why 2013 is the year top astronomers say the aliens will be revealed, the breeding and hybridization program for humans and aliens. Both books available for a donation of $35. The second book is only available through our ministry. I'm interrupting this telecast with a special announcement. We have a new pope, St. Francis. According to the Malachi prophecy, he had to be a Roman. Did you know that this new pope's parents were from Italy, Roman? Not only that, he's the first Jesuit to ever be pope. And as you've just heard, the Jesuits are involved with the aliens. To hear this week's interview or watch archives of our television show, It's Supernatural, visit our website at www.sidroth.org.
It's amazing what is happening here. And this is one of nine parts of different interviews that we're going to bring to you and begin to show you this particular 900 years ago, this Malachi prophecy was given 900 years ago. And we're going to make, not only are these available, these books available at Sid Roth ministry, as he just said, but also they're available. You can go to the Torch, go to VFNTV.com and click on the Torch. And both books, Petros Romanos and Exo Vaticana, is going to be available for you that they wrote. And these are not, they don't call themselves prophets. We hired investigators. We went and talked to them. And this is what they said, including, and I'll talk to you when we get back, about the Jesuits, which I was with when I was in Sacramento, and have a little insight on that. You listen to VFN Radio. We'll be right back.
There are seasons that most of us experience in marriage. This is John Fuller with Focus on the Family Minute, and Patricia Ashley vividly describes a difficult time in her marital relationship.
When I say it was dead, I mean that I didn't love my husband. I didn't hate him. I wasn't glad to see him come. I wasn't glad to see him go. It didn't make a difference what time he came in or if he came in at all. Yeah, do y'all, that's dead, huh? No feeling.
Well, Patricia went on to share how God brought a spark of life to her marriage as she and her husband prayed, and he gave them hope to begin working on their relationship. And now they're celebrating 43 years of marriage. You can hear all of Patricia's inspirational message today at FocusOnTheFamily.com/radio.
When I know that you listen to VFN Radio.
Every day, like clockwork. If I do miss the morning, guy, I love to see, I hear you guys bright and crisp in the morning. Man, it's a fresh revelation, man, to hear you guys and to hear what, you know, the news behind the news. I love Brother Greg, man. You know, he's hilarious. You come in right there with him. I feel in my spirit that it's everybody should have an opportunity to really listen, even if it's just once, man. And
well, that's great. Let me ask you, what would you say? You know, what would you say to other people about VFN Radio? I mean, I know you listen to it all the time, but as far as, I mean, what's kind of the main thing that you get out of it?
Believe it or not, I get more knowledge and wisdom through listening to the VFN Radio. I can't explain it. It's something that I just don't see that anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so when you get to hear the stuff that's happening behind all the political hoopla, because to me that's what it is, you know, it starts to wake you up. Your spirit wakens up even more. These prophetic words coming to light, you know.
Exactly. And that's what we're seeing, and that's what I love about what God is doing on the face of the earth and what he's doing through VFN Radio and the opportunities that we get to share. But I'm encouraged that you're listening, that you're getting plugged in, and that you're plugging in others. Yeah. You know, because we, you know, who knows how long we have left? I mean, to use this medium for the glory of God and to connect people to the Lord, and get a fresh word. We always say that.
You're right. You know, I said that today to somebody. I said, you know, we got to live for God like he's coming tomorrow.
That's right.
Because if we're unprepared, then we're the ones that are going to be left behind. And there's no excuse. If you're serving him, then serve him all the way. Dive in head first. And just continue the journey, because it's an awesome journey. I mean, I look back and reflect on my life and what I've been through and how he saved me from death at 33. And how he's brought me all the way to where I'm at now. I'm like,
that's a beautiful journey.
You know, there's just no way that I could have been. I could have done this on my own.
Well, one day we're definitely going to get your testimony for VFN
Radio. Oh, I would love to.
But thanks for coming on in, man. God bless you.
God bless you.
It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation. That stand with us prayerfully and financially. That just partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation and this nation, by God's grace, to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. You're listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat and John. We're just talking about the interview that Sid Roth is having with the authors of the book, Petros Romanos, and the other book is, we'll have that for you in just a moment, but in the context of it, that they're talking about the Malachi prophecies. The Malachi prophecies and what is taking place, and it is amazing. The other book is Exo Vaticano, which talks about, you know, the same as the days of Noah, and it's being proven of things that the Jesuits are actually saying openly, writing documents and emails back and forth. There's this evidentiary, everything's documented of what they're doing, and obviously there's some Catholics that are like totally renouncing all this, which is, you know, obviously God has a remnant of his people everywhere that's saying these guys are crazy. But the thing is, they're the ones writing the rules for the Vatican. They're the ones doing, you know, that type of thing. And we're familiar with being around people who say they walk with you, but they're trying to kill you at the same time. So we're not saying that this is every Catholic, but we're definitely letting you hear the interview themselves of what they discovered, that there are people that have crept in. Even Paul said, be careful. You know, because wolves will come in amongst you, even from your own number. And he said, I warned you day and night, and what we're finding out about. And so there's nothing new in regards to this because, I mean, since day one, men, God's put worship inside of us. He's put worship inside of us. And so we're going to worship something or someone. It's just going to happen. And it's not unusual for people to, if you read just even the Old Testament and understand, people would just carve gods. They would just make up a god. Mm-hmm. And this is the god of this, and this is the god of that. And they would worship it. They would lay things down at it. Well, it's no different today. People are making new gods. They're creating new concepts, and they're not gods, but that's who they worship. And liturgy. So when you talk about the God who is unchanging, the same yesterday, today, and forever, and you talk about his exactness, and they jump on you, and they come against you because they're thinking that you should have created a different God than that, because they think as they morphed their God, that God morphed with them, and he didn't. Mm. He's the same yesterday and today and forever. They just left God or never knew him in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unusual for people just to begin to just create their own concept of God, which that's what they're doing, Dave. You notice there's bumper stickers that has every form of religion on the same sticker, mm-hmm. and the whole thing of Rodney King, why can't we just all get along here? And the thing is, the Antichrist and Christ will never get along.
Right.
They'll never get along. Anti-Jesus. In other words, this is, when you hear Antichrist, so many people have pictured something with horns on his head. But think about this, that anti-you. You know, you're not going to hang out with somebody who's anti-you. I mean, they're against you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not this old freaky thing you're thinking about. It's anti-Jesus, somebody that's against the Son of God. And there's no way to God except through his Son, Jesus Christ. If you deny Jesus, you're anti-Jesus. Whatever God you're worshiping is not the true God.
That's right.
That makes sense. That's right. And so it's not unusual that people that would make this. So we got that was the first in 10 interview segments that we're going to have of Sid Roth's interview. And it's going to just really, you can find out more about this on the VFN Torch by going to VFNTV.com and clicking on the torch. Listen, there is a worker right now, and you've got to hear this from CBN News, that is sharing the horrors of him working at an abortion clinic. And it's, you know, we've been praying, as we talked about and you heard earlier on the broadcast last week, that we've been saying, God, end abortion, send revival. And right when it looks like it's at its darkest point, that's normally when the robber pulls out and shoots every bullet he has in great tragedies happen, when Herod goes and starts slaughtering all these babies and all these things are going on, some people go, well, it's over. It's like, no, he's actually, that's his last breath. He's trying, and right now it looks like, you know, we're going to talk about it, but you got to first hear what's happening inside these. This is actually from somebody who works inside the clinic, and then we're going to go right into, if we still have time, about a lawsuit that's going on right now where people are going to jail for murder who were in there for abortion. Listen up.
Thanks for joining us on the CBN News Channel. I'm Charlene Israel. It is the most sensational murder trial you've never heard of because it's getting almost no media coverage, and the victims in this case are unborn babies. Gary Lane has the story.
Dr. Kermit Gosnell is charged with killing a woman patient and seven babies allegedly born alive at his abortion clinic in inner-city Philadelphia. Gosnell could face the death penalty. Eight former employees have already pleaded guilty, some to third-degree murder. They've testified about the bizarre and often chaotic practices at the clinic, including some of the horrible things they saw. One said she saw aborted babies move at least twice. Another said she snipped the spines of at least 10 babies. And another said she thought one baby could have lived if it had not been aborted. She cried as she said she thought he was at least 30 weeks, around 7.5 months along. Gosnell himself later joked the baby was so big he could have walked to the bus stop. Gosnell's lawyer disputes that any babies were born alive, and his former lawyer, Bill Brennan, says the trial will take some time.
Between death penalty, length of service, and the abortion issue, and when you factor that in, I mean, it got international attention when it broke. It's going to be a long, difficult process.
Although the Associated Press has reported on the trial, it has received virtually no national media coverage. That's led some conservatives and at least one liberal to criticize the media for ignoring the case. Liberal analyst Kirsten Powers wrote in USA Today Thursday, "Let me state the obvious. This should be front page news. You don't have to oppose abortion rights to find late-term abortion abhorrent or to find the Gosnell trial eminently newsworthy. The deafening silence of too much of the media, once a force for justice in America, is a disgrace." Gary Lane, CBN News.
You're listening to VFN Radio. As we're sharing with you, it's like God is beginning to bring this thing to fruition, that he's on murder. An abortionist doctor is on a murder trial. A murder trial. Even CBS News is reporting now, as they're beginning to be confronted, they're not reporting it, that this abortion murder trial is sparking political firestorms.
Well, think about it. At least, you know, thank God that they're actually sharing this, where other media outlets are not. Yet, what did you hear when Michael Vick was having these dogs fight the professional football player?
Right.
There was an outcry over dogs.
Anything but human life. Anything but human life, which shows you what's behind it. Snuffing out the image and the likeness of God.
You don't hear anything about this.
Right. And listen up, this morning on CBN News, as they're reporting what's taking place, as there's been some sort of blackout in regards to media and what's taking place. Listen up.
Fish hands. Well, here at home, there's a shocking abortion trial going on, but that story apparently has been ignored by what would be called the major news media, with the exception of Fox and, of course, CBN. Lee Webb has that story from our CBN newsroom. Lee.
You're right, Pat, and it's not clear whether abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell will testify in his own defense in his murder trial this week. Gosnell is charged with the deaths of seven babies allegedly born alive and a 41-year-old woman patient. Authorities say the babies were killed using scissors. Eight former employees have already pleaded guilty, some to third-degree murder. Seven other former employees have already been convicted, and prosecutors will call more witnesses this week. The case has sparked an uproar among some conservatives and even some liberals. They accuse big media, as Pat mentioned, of ignoring this story. CBN News will bring you more coverage of the Gosnell trial from Philadelphia. But as I mentioned, Kristen Powers, who's no conservative, Pat, wrote apparently an op-ed piece in USA Today saying that the media better start covering this story. And apparently they listened, and I think some of the big media outlets have indeed started to cover it.
Well, it's like a slaughterhouse. If anybody who was a so-called pro-life advocate did anything even a fraction of as vicious as this thing, the media would be all over it. But because this makes abortion look bad, then the media doesn't want to cover it. But this is just absolutely horrible what this man was doing. But you know, folks, why is it okay to kill a baby that is 5 months old in the womb and is he's called a, quote, fetus, and he can feel, he can sense, he would probably be capable of being alive if he was outside the womb. But somehow, according to the way the laws are written, it's okay to kill him. And it's called a legitimate abortion. But once he's born, or she's born, then it becomes murder. And so what they were doing, these babies were being born as they are intended to do, and they would take scissors and snip their spinal cords and kill them. And therefore, it becomes murder. Would you please tell me, I'm a little dense, but would you tell me what the difference is?
So important, because now the argument's out. That's the key. You've got the argument's got to begin. And remember that we are a land of laws. So now you're going to begin to see cases argued. And what started off as I'm just having an abortion, now people are going to jail for manslaughter and murder.
That's because
the babies are being born alive, just like we just had last week when you heard those legislators talk about what was going on, and they were shocked that the lady stood up with Planned Parenthood and said, you know, we would basically, you know, take their life out.
Right.
And what they're saying is they're testifying that they're taking scissors when this baby's born alive, which is has constitutional rights. You know, at that point they ruled in 2002 that this is a patient, a child, and you can't, and they cut their spinal cords and killed the babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're testifying to that. But understand, you're hearing these gruesome things take place, but understand this, it's been happening, but we've been praying and God is beginning to surface this situation. And if we'll continue to pray and say, God, end abortion, send revival. And if you're the one that man or woman that participated in the process, listen, acknowledge it for what it is. Ask God to forgive you. He'll forgive you. He's forgiven us. We said, Lord, it's sin. We've done wrong. God, forgive me for it. And he'll forgive us, and he'll restore us, and he'll remember it no more, and he'll give us a new wind over our nation, a new breath of a spirit, possibly a third great awakening. Dear God, end abortion, God. Send revival. End abortion. Send revival. You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.